I guess the first thing everybody needs to know is, well, first of all, we're going to focus on medical assistance. There are other private health insurance that might be available, but we're going to be focusing today on the public health insurance system, medical assistance. So the first thing is to make sure that you're on medical assistance. You may have been on medical assistance as a child and need to reapply, and things may change. So the two ways that adults would be on medical assistance, adults with disabilities in particular, would be either because they're on SSI or because they're in the program called Medical Assistance for Workers with Disabilities. So if you haven't applied for SSI, you should do that. Because not only will it get you medical assistance automatically, it will also get you a monthly check. But if you have too much money to qualify for medical assistance because of a job that you have, or because of benefits that you're getting, like survivor's benefits, then you want to apply for medical assistance for workers with disabilities. And you only have to work an hour a week to be considered working for that. So it's definitely something you should do. Now, once you're on medical assistance, there are going to be a lot of changes about what benefits you're actually entitled to. Up until you were 21, if you were on medical assistance, you were entitled to pretty much anything that was medically necessary, anything that everybody agreed was medically necessary. You might have a fight about whether something was medically necessary, but that was your entitlement. As adults, that's very different. There are a lot of benefits that you just don't have in the regular medical assistance program. For example, there is no shift nursing in the adult medical assistance program. There's no therapeutic staff support, TSS, in the adult medical assistance program. There are limits on how often you can get a new wheelchair or how much physical therapy you can get. These are all different when you become an adult. But there are ways to deal with these things because there are other programs, medical assistance programs, that are called waivers. Those waivers are not, unlike regular medical assistance, you're not automatically eligible for them. And even if you're eligible for them, there might be a waiting list. It's a very different kind of system than the one you're used to. But they are there, and it's very important that you figure out what you can apply for, hopefully before you turn 21. In your binder, you will find materials about all the different waivers, what the eligibility requirements are, what the services are that they provide, and how to apply for them, where to call. And we're not going to have time here today to go through all the details of all the waivers, so I just want to make sure you all know they're in the binders and you should look there. What we are going to do today is an exercise using a hypothetical young woman and figure out what she should be applying for in order to continue getting the kinds of services that she was getting, and also what new services she might want as an adult that she didn't need as a child in becoming more independent. The other thing we're going to talk a little bit about is what to do when you're told no, that you can't have something. At the very end of this session, you're going to be asked to do an evaluation. So we'll have to give you enough time for that. Okay. So Jenny's going to start with explaining our hypothetical.
Okay, so everyone got scared and said, are we going to have to do anything when we get in here? Are we going to have to do an activity? You're going to do an activity, but we're not going to make you, you know, dance and jump up and down. But the very bright colored papers in front of you, whether you might be a lone person, a one person with a couple cards in front of you, we just want you to take 1 minute to just briefly look at those cards. Because what we're going to be doing is trying to look at, if we look at this young woman, her needs and her situation before 21, how, like Rachel said, we can try to help her continue those services that she needs as an adult. And so some of the things we have in front of you might help this young woman. We're going to call her Cindy. Some may not. not. But so if you can take just one minute, because I know we don't have a lot of time, just to familiarize yourself with what's on the card, kind of what the definition or the explanation of what the thing on the front is on the back. So kind of look briefly at the front and the back of your cards. Okay, so does everyone have kind of just a brief idea of what they're holding? And we'll explain more about what those things are. So Cindy is about to turn 21. And her situation and kind of the services she's receiving, she has cerebral palsy and Asperger syndrome. Right now, before she's turning 21, she has medical assistance based on her disability. She's still living with her parents, but she's considering other options. She uses a wheelchair. She gets physical therapy and occupational therapy at school as part of her IEP 2 times a week. She gets social skills training at school, also through her IEP. Her parents do accompany her on most places she goes because she's still working on trying to do those things on her own and better socialize. She has the help of a healthcare aide in school to help her with transfers from her wheelchair, to help her with toileting and some other things, but her parents help her with that at home. And she also uses a G-tube. So that's her situation before she turns 21. And obviously, the couple of things we're going to be dealing with is, as Rachel said, making sure she continues her Medicaid. But there were some things she got from Medicaid and some things she got from school, and she's not going to be in high school anymore. She's probably going to continue her education, but not going to get an IEP. So let's start with... So she had medical assistance based on her disability. What would you guys recommend that she do after 21?
Does anybody have a card that helps answer that question? Okay, over here. And what have you got? So what should she do? Apply for SSI, right? And you had...
No, I know the answer. We don't have the right card yet.
That's okay. If you can speak up anyway.
The autism waiver, where I'd go with that.
Okay.
At least apply for it. Should already be applied for. Be on the waiting list for the autism waiver.
That's an excellent idea. And the MA, the income eligibility for the waivers is a little higher than for regular MA. So it is possible, too, that's a way into medical assistance. And by the way, if you get into a waiver, with that comes all the rest of MA. Adult MA, not all the rest of the stuff you got as kids, but all the rest of your adult medical assistance comes along with you're getting into the waiver. So the first thought is she should apply for SSI to get on MA that way. Second is she can apply for a waiver, and there are other waivers that she could apply for. And before I go on to other waivers, I will say with the autism waiver, to be eligible for the autism waiver, You do have to have an autism spectrum diagnosis, but you also have to have a relatively high level of need. So if in this case, and we don't know that much about our hypothetical person, if she has very mild Asperger's, she may not be eligible for the autism waiver. But if it's more severe, she probably would be. Does anybody have...
What if Cindy's working?
I don't have the mod card, but... I said, I don't have the mod card, but wherever that's floating around, I would say.
Does anyone have the mod card, the medical assistance for workers with disabilities?
Yes, there's two of them out here, yeah. So, so as I said before, there's two reasons you might want to apply for a mod. One might be because you're already working, and that's put you above the income level, because the income limits for mod are much higher than they are for SSI. The other reason is that some kids are getting, young adults are getting benefits from Social Security as a result of something that happened with their parent. For example, their parent died and had a work history, and they're getting survivor's benefits. And those survivor's benefits make them ineligible for SSI because they have too much money. If they go to work even 1 hour a week, they can then apply for MOD, and those much, much higher income limits would be used for that.
Okay. And then just briefly, we have a little information sheet in your binders about SSI. And usually the age we care about the most is the 18, not 21 as much. But I think what's important for you guys to understand is before you turned 18, they were looking at your parents' income. After 18, they're looking at yours, even if you're still living with your parents. So while you might have not thought you were income eligible for SSI before turning 18, you might after 18. There's more in your packet about that, but just wanted to keep that in mind. Now, so we are pretty good with getting her, making sure she has her medical assistance. But one of the things she gets is she has a G-tube. And at this point, before she turned 21, her doctor had prescribed that a nurse help her with the G-tube. So she had nursing services through medical assistance. What would we do with her so she can continue that service after 21?
Just real quick, I have a question. Can you please explain what a G-tube is, because I do not know?
It's a feeding tube.
Independence waiver.
It is a possibility. If she needs a visiting nurse,
yes,
that is provided by the independence waiver. It's if she needs a lot more nursing, it probably would not.
The OBRA waiver could address maybe her need for support around her physical health care needs, as well as it does identify some issues for individuals on the autism spectrum, although Asperger's is probably not the typical diagnosis, but it's 18 and up, I think, 59.
Yes.
And, so.
Yeah, the OBRA waiver. And let me just talk for a minute about the various waivers. There are waivers for a lot of different diagnoses. So there is the autism waiver, which is brand new and just starting up. There are two mental retardation waivers. There are there's a waiver for called the ComCare waiver for people with traumatic brain injury. There are three waivers that relate to people with physical disabilities. Depending on how much need you have for service, the one with the least need is called the attendant care waiver, and that's basically, you need an attendant, and that's they provide a couple of other things, like in a personal emergency response system, but very little beyond the attendant. There's the independence waiver that provides a lot more, but is limited to about, I don't know the exact amount, but it's something like $40,000 a year worth of service. And then there's the OBRA waiver, which has an unlimited amount of money depending on your need. And it provides a long list of services, which, again, are in your binders and on some of the cards out here if people have them. There's also an AIDS waiver. And let's see, did I forget any? The Michael Dallas waiver, yes, which is an interesting question about the feeding tube. Michael Dallas waiver is for people who are dependent on technology to live. The state has taken a very narrow view of what that is. Ventilators. They probably would say G-tube doesn't count. Maybe if somebody was on the G-tube 24 hours a day and had no other way of doing anything feeding-wise, but that's been a bit of a battle. In any event, I think that covers all the waivers that are out there. So which of those waivers might be helpful to this particular young woman? We've already mentioned independence and OBRA and autism. Are there any others?
Attendant care, yes.
She certainly can get very useful help from attendant care. The question is, can she get all that she needs? Because you cannot be in two waivers at the same time. So if the attendant care waiver meets some of her needs, but it's not going to help with the G-tube, And, well, we'll come back to that, actually. Maybe it will. If it doesn't meet all of her needs, she needs to be in something else.
Was there another hand over here?
Would the Michael Dallas waiver be appropriate with the right amount of advocacy?
Possibly. As I said, that's a battle. Actually, I want to come back in a little bit to the whole issue of appeals and how to fight when they say no. So we'll come back to that in a little bit. Yeah.
I think the best waiver for this individual would be the OBRA waiver.
Because
it not only covers for, say, the cerebral palsy, but it's also covering for the Asperger's, and as you mentioned, it has unlimited funding there.
Okay.
So who has the OBRA waiver?
Okay. Somebody had mentioned the attendant care waiver. It's interesting that there are a lot of services that, for children, are always handled by a nurse because home health agencies aren't allowed to send home health aides out to do certain things that they expect nurses to do. In the adult world, in the attendant care waiver, for example, you can hire and fire your own attendant, and it doesn't have to be a person from a home health agency. Basically, they check criminal record, and you know, you have to be over 18 and not have and they check your criminal record and child abuse history. But you could hire your neighbor or your friend or somebody, you know, you put an ad in Craigslist for an attendant, and that attendant can be trained to do things that you may have had a nurse doing before. Just like your parents were trained to do a lot of the stuff when the nurse wasn't there. And so, you know, I think people should check with their doctors because everybody's different. And feeding tubes are different. We said a G-tube, there are J-tubes, and I don't know, there are all kinds of feeding tubes, some of which are much more invasive or tricky to work with than others. So you should check with your doctor to make sure that that's going to be okay. But you should not assume that just because it had to be a nurse when you were a child, that it has to be a nurse when you're an adult.
But if it is.
If the doctor says, I'm sorry.
You
yes.
Say one waiver per person?
Okay. If it is, you know, if the doctor says, and maybe it's not a G-tube, maybe it's some other invasive procedure, and the doctor says, no, this really, really has to be a nurse, there is an appeal process. You apply to your health insurance company for a nurse, and they say, no, we don't do shift nursing now that you're 21. There's an exceptions process. Well, there's also, I should say, adults are entitled to 15 hours a month of a combination of nurses, home health aides, and physical, occupational, and speech therapists. So if you only need a little bit, you know, the occasional visiting nurse, you might actually simply be able to get it from MA as an adult on the adult schedule. But that would be, you know, just a few visits and not an eight-hour shift either, talking about a visit that's usually an hour to 2 hours. But if you need more than that, there is an exceptions process. So you can file an appeal. You would want your doctor to write a very detailed letter about how this would threaten your life or impact your long-term health severely if they don't make an exception to their rule on the limits of how much nursing you can get. Now, again, this will be a big battle, but that is something that you can appeal. And then, again, there's the waivers, because you can get nursing in the OBRA waiver. Usually it's just visiting nursing, but again, the OBRA waiver is, there's no monetary limit, so you can appeal. Again, if they say no, it's too much, you can appeal that as well.
No, I just want a clarification. You were talking about just medical assistance there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you were starting to get into the appeal process.
Yes, I was.
Just, okay.
Yes, everything I'm saying is about medical assistance.
Right, but if I just had a medical assistance card, were you saying I'd get 15 hours, which isn't a whole lot, if depending on the situation. So that's where you could do an appeal, just based on having medical assistance if your doctor thought you needed more, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 15 visits a month of the whole combination of those therapies is what's on the schedule. So if you need more than that, you'd have to appeal and ask for an exception.
So you can do that without having a waiver, right?
Yes, you can do that without having a waiver. You would ask for an exception. And again, the standard for exceptions is very high. You have to show that it's life-threatening, that your long-term health will be seriously jeopardized to get an exception to the 15-visit-a-month rule.
And we have in the materials the number, of course, for DRN, for the Health Law Project, because if you are going to appeal, you have to do it very quickly. And even if you're not sure if you can do it on your own, if you need help, you want to send that appeal in so you get it in enough time and then work on trying to get help with building the evidence or the information from the doctor that you need. So you just want to remember to do that quickly.
Generally speaking, if you're getting a service and it's being terminated and you appeal within 10 days, you can keep it going pending that process. I'm not sure how that would apply if the only reason of the denial was you just turned 21 and it's no longer a covered service. I've never seen that scenario come up. But in any event, I would argue that it applies and make your appeal very quickly. On the other hand, if you've been without it and you're making a new request, you have 30 days to appeal a denial, and you can always and if you miss the 30 days, just apply again and do it that way.
And so just we have, just so you know her situation, pre-21, she's living at home, she is using a wheelchair. Now here we come up with a problem. She's getting physical therapy. PT and physical therapy and occupational therapy 2 times a week, but it's at school through her IEP. And so at 21, she's graduating. How is she going to get those services after 21? And it might be something already up here, but it might be something in the audience.
A consolidated waiver if she's MR.
A consolidated waiver if she has MR as well.
Yes. The consolidated mental retardation waiver is very comprehensive. But if she doesn't...
Yeah, for Cindy, we think these are her two diagnoses, at least right now.
And it may be things we've already talked about, but...
Would it be a good idea to look into having her evaluated for MR before she turns 22? I think 22 might be the age in Pennsylvania.
If there's reason to think that she might have mental retardation, then it is very good to have it done early. But usually, if she's been in school, it would be very unusual if she hadn't been evaluated.
Okay. So at this point, it would be assumed that she doesn't have MR since she doesn't carry that diagnosis at this juncture in time.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, there are still things that medical assistance does cover. So we don't want to, even though there are a lot of limitations that you're going to be dealing with when she turns 21, she might be able to get those therapies through medical assistance because it might be within the limits. So she might be able to do that. So we don't want to always make it sound like you always have to go somewhere else and that there'll be a fight. This might be a situation where she could get those as part of her health plan.
Again, the PT-OT, that would be, along with the nursing and the home health aid, the 15 visits a month would be the limit in the regular MA program. But again, it's covered, as you'll see on many of your cards, it's covered in the independence waiver, the OBRA waiver, not the attendant care waiver, and I believe the autism waiver, at least the OT is. I'm not sure about the PT.
It's just occupational therapy.
That is, we got that information from some list somewhere, but if I would ask, I would not.
I work for a care office.
Okay. There you go.
We did try to get most of the specific services from the list on DPW's website, because we wanted to try to say what the state thought.
Well, the autism waiver is changing as we get more providers on board to be a provider. So if we get a PT provider, then PT probably would go on it. It's just a matter of getting the providers trained and ready to go under the autism waiver. So it changes daily.
Well, the waivers have, they get submitted and approved by the federal government. So they should provide everything that they told the federal government that they would provide. And then every couple of years, they resubmit papers to the government about what they're doing.
At this point, yes, it is not covered.
So they will provide it. PT is a definition, so they will provide it.
Right.
You
mean it's in?
The problem is we don't provide it.
Right. It is.
You're saying it is in the service definitions that were submitted to the feds?
No, as far as I know,
it's not a service definition.
It's not in there yet because we do not have providers.
Okay, but this might be a situation where maybe she is getting a lot, the bulk of her other services from the autism waiver, and could use all of her, use PT and OT as what she uses for those 15 a month, perhaps.
Or couldn't she just go to her doctor and say, hey, have a doctor write a medical necessity note to say that she needs PT and OT?
Well, again, if it's outside the limit of 15 visits a month of all those things combined, the only way she could get it through regular MA is if the doctor could say this is life-threatening or really major, serious, whatever. So it couldn't just be, it would be better if she got more because
that's the big difference with turning 21 and not having the EPSDT request. Right. They don't have those guarantees, so you'd have to do.
If I was a parent and my kid was turning 21 and I was on a waiting list for a waiver, I might want to do that as a stopgap.
You could try it. And all I'm saying is it's a much, much higher standard to meet. And so the likelihood that you'll win it is probably not that strong when it comes to PT and OT.
Okay.
As opposed to something that might be.
All right. If anybody gets caught in that situation, have them see me.
Okay. What's your name?
I'm Mike Owens. I work for the ARC Advocacy Services of Montgomery, Bucks, and Berks.
Excellent.
And I've been downtown with Appeal, so, you know. And if anybody wants my card, our table's right out here.
If you have, let's say, a waiver that covers just OT, and you're also going to get PT, is your OT coming out of your standard MA, even though it's covered under the... Do you know what I'm saying?
You're supposed to use your standard MA first.
Okay.
So if you need more PT, like we were talking about the 15 visits a month, let's say you also need PT, OT, speech, and maybe a visiting nurse. All of that together, you're probably going to need more than 15 visits a month. So the waiver, to the extent that it covers that service, will provide the additional amount that you need.
I'm a bit confused about the 15 visits a month. If the person has PT and OT two times per week and a month is 4 weeks long, that would cover 15 visits. They need 16 visits. Could they possibly be okay without that 16th visit per month?
Maybe
this waiver, because I'm thinking from the perspective of the least amount of services with still providing the necessary care.
If you're, first of all, those number of visits, again, you have to also take into account whether you need visiting nurse, home health aide, or speech, because those get thrown into the same.
All right, that's where I was getting confused.
Okay. But, you know, if 15 visits almost gives you what your doctor prescribed, you're probably not going to get an exception. But if you have other needs, and in fact, let's talk for a minute about some of the independent, some reasons why you might want a waiver for things that you were not getting as a kid, like community integration services. A lot of the waivers provide, including Independence and OBRA and ComCare, they provide something called community integration services, or some of them use a slightly different term for it. But basically, they're designed to take adults out into the community and help them learn how to maneuver life in the community independently.
And that is something we have that Cindy needs. Her parents have been doing a lot of that for her. And for some of you young adults, you love your parents dearly, but you might want a little more independence.
So whether you've been living with your parents, or we also see a lot of people who have been living in nursing homes and are able as a result of getting into these waivers to get out of a nursing home, but they've never been to the bank themselves before, never, you know, taken the bus route themselves, because whether it was, you know, their home or they were living in a facility of some kind, they didn't have that opportunity to learn those things. So a lot of these waivers will provide that service to help people learn how to live independently in the community.
Well, what about, and I think maybe some young adults are thinking about, what if I don't want to live with my parents anymore? What if I do want to either live with others, have some support, or be on my own? Are there any options out there in the audience that we might want Cindy to consider for places to live, or how she's going to finance where she lives? Okay.
I see local housing options team.
So this is not a place, but it's a great resource for everyone. You have in your materials where these teams are. They're kind of divided up regionally. But they can provide a lot of information about supportive housing options. They really do focus on behavioral health disabilities, but I still would say that they're worth contacting for information on housing resources. Does anyone have any others? Now, people sometimes get confused with DomCare. They might think of this is for people who might be older, but DomCare is for individuals 18 and older. It is a home setting. You live in someone's home, but you are an adult. This isn't a foster home. It's not where you are an adult living in someone's home. They provide some support, but it's very limited, and to a large extent, you are going about your day, whether it's going to be school, training, work, treatment, and you have a lot of freedom, but you do have the support of getting your meals there, and they provide limited assistance. So those are two good options. And another reason, when Rachel was talking about the importance of applying for SSI, a lot of times it is going to be your SSI benefit that's going to help with your room and board costs, and then you can get other services related to the room and board so that it might help you support a more independent living setting.
I think it's time for the evaluation stuff.
And we are sorry we had to go so quickly. Our information is in the packets because we know a lot of these issues are very specific to individuals, and we're happy to address your questions and hope we provided at least kind of a start of where you would start to look for how to make sure you do get what you need when you're 21 and get those other supports you might need as a young adult.
So are there any questions for us before we just stop? Yeah.
My one question is, who makes a determination on if an individual is able to live on his or her own?
Well, I'm trying to think of the different scenarios of situations. Generally, an adult who believes they can live on their own and who is able to apply for and get the services that they need to live on their own would be able to do that unless somebody went to court and told, you know, and found them to be incompetent. So if you go into if you apply for one of these waivers, somebody will come out and assess you to determine what you actually need in order to live on your own or in order to live somewhere else that's not on your own, but that's part of their programs. Some of the programs, let me step back, the mental retardation waivers and the autism waiver will help you actually have a living setting to live in. They have what they call residential habilitation. But the physical disability waivers don't have that. So you have to be able to find an apartment. You have to figure that out with the help of some advocates, but you're basically on your own to do that. So anytime you apply for a waiver, somebody's going to assess how much service you need. If you disagree with them about that, you can file an appeal. But as an adult, you can live, you have a right to make your own decision unless somebody goes to court and finds you to be incompetent to make your own decisions. Yeah.
Hi. We missed the beginning portion, and I just want to clarify.
Yes, visits. It's not necessarily an hour, but a visit, whatever a visit means to the provider. It doesn't mean a shift, though. It's just a visit. And as I said, just to be really clear, it's a combination of all those services together. If you put together the nurse, the home health aide, the PT, the OT, the speech, it can't add up to more than 15 visits altogether. There was a question up here.
Oh. I have a suggestion. It's not a question. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the possibility of construction of some sort of grid.
That would identify some of the key disabilities that exist. And on that grid, you would have possible responses to that beyond the age 21 and a check for this particular response and that particular. Mm-hmm. I think that would be quite helpful to someone, a novice as myself, in making some suggestion as to what course of action need to be taken.
I think it's a good idea. It's a little hard, not impossible, but hard to do because, as you can see from some of the cards, the list of services are very long and overlapping and kind of all over the place. But if somebody really, you know, worked hard at it, I think that something like that could be done. Yeah.
Some years ago when my son was diagnosed with Asperger's, after not having much help getting behavioral health support through my work provided insurance and the behavioral health firm that they were associated with, I was encouraged over and over again to apply for medical assistance, which ultimately I did. And medical assistance, originally they implied that my chances were slim, that he was not going to get it. I had lots of documentation and IEP documentation, letters from doctors, letters from the school. And they sent me to SSI and told me that I had to apply for SSI before they would make a determination. Originally, they were going to turn me down. Then they said, well, go to SSI, and if SSI turns you down, then you will be approved for medical assistance. And that is what occurred. And the services have improved under public medical assistance as opposed to private insurance. And he's not no longer on my work insurance. The question I have is, when he turns 18, should I reapply for SSI?
Yes. If only, you know, because he might actually get it, money, and medical assistance with it. But
money with the being approved for SSI to firm up and make his diagnosis more officially accepted or the ongoing ability to see services.
I believe that the standard for adults and children is a little bit different on SSI. So even though SSI already made a determination as a child that he had a disability, what must have happened is they said, yes, he has a disability, but you have too much money. And so MA accepted the disability determination and didn't care about the money because we have different rules here on MA. So if he meets the adult standard for disability, then not only will he get the MA to go along with it, but he'll get the money.
Because it'll be based on his
income. It'll be based on his income and not yours. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's good to know.
That's optional. I mean, you could lose your existing MA benefits if it's not applicable.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two daughters, so I'm going to ask two separate questions. The one has to do with the OBRA waiver. I understand if you have one waiver, you can't have another waiver. This first time I've heard about the DOM care and also the MCO, and I was just wondering if the OBRA waiver has no housing component in it. So would she be eligible to apply for, say, DOM care?
Yeah, DOM care is not a waiver.
Okay.
It's just a housing option. So she could apply for that whether she's in a waiver or not in a waiver if she doesn't have housing. When you said the MCO, the managed care organ, that...
Supported housing through Office of Behavior Health.
Okay, yeah, there's two other things we have in your materials about housing options. Through your county behavioral health system, it is likely that they do have some supportive housing options for individuals with behavioral health. Now, those, in some counties, there's waiting lists, which is why we're kind of trying to give you guys different options. In Philadelphia, this kind of system is called AAS, Access to Alternative Services, and there's other programs in other counties. So it's definitely something you want to check with your behavioral health plan in your county and see what housing options there are. So that might be a possibility. The other thing we have in there is there are some vouchers for housing, which is, you know, they give you something that you can use as rent in certain apartments that take those vouchers. They used to be known as Section 8. Now we kind of call them housing choice vouchers. There are some of those available for individuals with disabilities, but you do have to check in your county who is administering those, if it's your housing authority or if it's been kind of contracted out to another agency.
Yeah, I have a question.
Please use the mic. She can't.
Because she was denied. She's just been denied for SSI because we didn't know she has too much money in the bank. So she was denied. Are we going to have a problem until she turns 21 for this yearly, reapplication process with MA?
She should apply. Well, first, she should apply for medical assistance for workers with disabilities. And if she's not working, she should work 1 hour a week, anything. She can work for you.
She does work.
Okay. So that is another way to get, for a person with a disability, to get medical assistance if they have too much money to meet the SSI definition.
That's MAUD.
Yeah, MAUD, exactly. Waivers, as I said, also have higher... limits, and I don't remember the resource limits. There are resource limits, and I don't remember if they're the same as the SSI.
It's a little higher. I think we have.
Yeah.
Them.
At the county assistance offices. One other thing I want to mention: if somebody has been getting shift nursing services through MA as a child, the state is supposed to have already identified them and already be figuring out how to get them into and what waiver to get them into to make sure that they don't end up in a nursing home when they turn 21. So you might want to check if you or your child has been getting shift nursing services. They can contact, if they're in a managed care plan, they can contact Eric Olsch at DPW to make sure that they've been identified and that they're on that list of people that are being thought through. Last question.
Okay, this concerns my other daughter. She was adopted, and she got medical assistance through being adopted. She turned 21, and she lost her insurance and went on my husband's policy until she was 23 while she was in school at the Hiram G. Andrews Center. She now has no insurance. She's worked at the same job for 5 years. I learned a lot about MAUD today, so we're going to apply for that. But before we apply for that, I have to get a special needs trust for her. She also has a retirement account that her father insisted that she get, which isn't a bad thing, but I'm afraid that might make her ineligible.
Special needs trusts are a very good thing to do for people who have money in the bank. And if the money is already in the name of the person with a disability, they may have to do what's called a pooled trust. There may be other options, but a pooled trust is something that actually the ARC has a program to help with. What you do have to understand about that is that when you go into a pooled trust, if the person with a disability dies, that money stays in the trust for other people with disabilities. It doesn't come back to the family. So that's just one thing you need to know. But if you do that, you can do that. You can take money that's already in the person with a disability's name and put it into the pooled trust, and then you would still be eligible for medical assistance. Yeah.
Asked, where do you apply for waivers? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, you apply for each waiver in a different place. It's not in your local county office. You apply, for example, to the two autism waivers through the Bureau of Autism Services. You apply for your mental retardation waivers,
yes,
through your local office
I'm
of
sorry,
mental retardation.
There's in the binders, we actually have the phone number for every place to apply for the different waivers. If you're not on medical assistance already, though, you do have to go to the county assistance office. I don't know exactly how that works, but I believe you do. Yeah.
You can apply for that online.
Yeah, that's true. They have all the DPW benefits. What do they call that site? The Compass, yes.
Hi. My son has an access card. And he's 20 right now. He'll be 21 in about 6 months. And he has just the medical benefits. Does he have to reapply then when he's 21 for medical assistance?
I'm sorry.
Does he have to reapply? He already has an access card right now. Does he need to reapply when he's 21?
I believe that, well, first of all, every year the medical assistance office requires you to fill out information about your eligibility. So it's going to be filled out anyway. Whether you have to make a separate application, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. If he's already on medical assistance in his own name as based on his own income, it probably would be no different than the yearly filling out of the forms.
Okay, we're going to have to end this workshop. Obviously, there are a lot of questions and a lot of interest. I'd like to know if the facilitators are going to be here for the meet and greet, and if you will be, our facilitators will be available to answer some of your questions, and I wanted to make sure you know that Mike Owens has information about the trust, the pool trust, okay?
All right. Our information is in the materials. And we're happy to take calls or emails about specific questions, too, after the
conference. Okay. We want to thank our workshop facilitators, Rachie and Gerald. Thank you. And please remember to fill out your surveys, your post-surveys. We are very interested in your comments.